Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
And we're back for another episode of the Startup Hustle. This is your host, Matt Watson. Very excited to be joined today by the founder and CEO of Scheduler AI, Mike Bell. You know what? When I first saw this, I'm like, created a scheduling app. How do you compete with Calendly? So I'm excited to talk to him about that today and learn more about what he's up to. Before we get started, I do want to remind you that today's episode is brought to you by Fullscale, which is my company. We build software for dozens of other startups and scale-ups. You can check us out at fullscale.io if you need to hire software developers. Mike, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
So how in the world did you get to wanting to build a scheduling app? Like, were you trying to schedule a date, hanging out with your friends? Like, what were you trying to schedule that you're like, damn it, there's got to be a better way?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, we're a long way from home if you check out our website today from where we started, but it really was born out of personal frustration. So my wife and I had this great group of friends, right, that we would see every Sunday at church. We'd make plans for the week and it was easy. And then fast forward a few years later, we've all got kids and we keep seeing each other and we're like, let's get together for lunch, this, whatever. And we see each other every week and not make it happen. We're like, this is awkward. Like, I actually do want to get together with you. There should be a better way to do it. And we were driving back one day and Maddie just goes, I should just be able to add the people I want to get together with to a text message chain, describe what we want to do, and something somewhere should make it happen. And like, literally that was like where the seed was planted.
So was that before other sorts of scheduling things existed, or was it, you know, like things like Calendly and all these kinds of things that exist, or?
Well, you know, they existed, but like you would never drop a Calendly link for your friends.
I've never done that. I haven't.
I've
never done it.
You know, people have tried doodle polls and stuff too. And we kind of tried everything. We're like, these all suck for trying to coordinate this. What would it look like to design something from the ground up that would be an awesome way to get people scheduled together? That was kind of where we started, right? And so we're basically like, can we essentially create, again, we're a long ways from home from where we are now, but like this person that just is in the group chat chain and just loves figuring out these details, right? Like, can we?
It's not me.
Exactly. It's an awful role. but if someone doesn't do it, it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So that was kind of the start. And then, you know, we got accepted to an accelerator and we kind of went through the whole first side of things, came out of the accelerator, raised a little bit of capital. I actually was able to hire my number two. Prior to this, I was leading data science for Nielsen. So okay. I brought in, you know, the person that I just was like, you know, I told this person, right, if I ever raise funding, you're my first call. And sure enough, she was, and she was ready to go. And we were like, well, testing this over text message is awful. We should put it in Slack. Okay. And then we started using it in Slack, and we're like, this doesn't suck. And right around that time, Slack was having a global hackathon. So we're like, well, you know, what the heck? We'll just put it in there and see what happens. And then we won the whole thing. So we won there. So we're like, okay, well, wait a second. There's something here, right? And as they started to promote us, and we started to have companies come in and, you know, purchase our product for a nominal amount, we started asking the question, right? Like, where do you really want this type of technology? And then we just started listening and iterating to get to the point where we are today.
So how was the idea changed, right? So originally it was the idea of, I'm trying to get together with my buddy, go have a beer, complain about our significant other and children, maybe. And yeah, dropping a Calendly link and a Slack message or a text message to him feels weird. So how did the idea evolve to today? What's different today?
So what became really clear to us, and you know this, right? As soon as you start asking for the credit card, you figure out where the frictions are. And what we started to realize was there are places in an organization where meetings make money, right? So like meetings get a whole bad rap today of like kill all meetings, right? Abolish all meetings. You know, you don't see that saying that. Salespeople and recruiters, right? Because they actually make money when meetings get booked, right? So they really started to kind of take off with this for a couple reasons. One, right, it's a key focus for them. They need these meetings. Two, link-based solutions like Calendly definitely have their place. We offer them as part of our products. We don't want to take anything away from people, but they're very reactive. You have put the work onto a prospect, whether you view it like that or not, right? Like,
it doesn't feel very personal for sure.
Totally. And it doesn't
it's like,
mean
like, here's some work to meet with me here. Go figure it out.
Bingo. And so I think, you know, like the big thing for us, Matt, was like, all right, well, every other solution out there is not solving the problem. They're shifting it. Links are now your problem, right? If you're the sender, organize something, it's yours. If you want to create a special kind of group hell, you can make a poll, right? And just bring everybody into it. But no one's actually like, I'm just going to like solve this problem based on what I mean, or at least get the ball rolling. Right. So I think what a lot of our, especially recruiting and sales teams appreciate is you pop scheduler onto a chain, you say, hey, can you propose a few times next week? And now, you know, in a matter of seconds, you've got this curated, times pulled, invites getting over, friendly reminders. Like the ball has started to roll without the prospect having to do the work.
Well, I love what you mentioned earlier about meetings that actually make money and are valuable because, like yesterday, One of the companies that I own and do work with is digital marketing related. Yeah. And one of the companies that it's actually a customer of ours wanted to have a meeting to talk about some JavaScript bug or errors on their site. Yeah. And they're like, can you meet today at this time and talk about this, whatever? And my answer was, no, just email me what the problem is. Like, we don't need a meeting for this, right? To your point, like, nobody makes money from this meeting.
That's exactly right.
It's just a waste of everybody's time. Just email me what the problem is and we'll take care of it. And we did. But I love that you talk about sales meetings. So at Full Scale, one of my sales guys brought up a week ago in our meeting. He's like, somehow if you go to Google and you search for software development services for equity or investment or something like that, people are finding Full Scale. And then they're setting up meetings, and as soon as I talk to them in the meeting, they just want us to do work for them for equity. And so we really should, like, how do we kill this blog post or something so these people stop calling me? And of course, you know what's going through my head, right? They need help. Sell them something, right? Right. It's somebody who needs to hire software developers. Why would we say don't call us? Just sell them something. Like, you just got an at bat and an opportunity. And you're trying to say you want less at bats. What kind of salesperson are you? Let's go. Right?
Yeah, no, you're right. It's all about uncovering opportunity. Right?
Maybe only 1 in 5 of them buy or 1 in 10 of them buy. But you know what? Give me the 9 no's so I get to the yes. Let's go.
Absolutely. I mean, it's market research at that point, right? And I mean,
yeah.
It's qualifying and routing, and it's kind of having a nose not just for where your market is today, but where your market might be tomorrow. Right, which has been a big part of this evolution.
But I love what you're saying about sales meetings because, yeah, it's like give me all the meetings. Give me more at-bats, right? Like everyone's more at-bat. Just like let's just go sell something.
And I, of course, I can appreciate it on the recruiting side of this too, because at Full Scale, we do a lot of recruiting. We hire a lot of software developers.
Absolutely.
So, you know, recruiting is huge. So what have you found this to be really valuable to other groups besides sales and recruiting, or is that still your sweet spot?
I'd say we get a lot of interest from other groups who we can serve. But at some point, right, we've tried to make Scheduler insanely customizable, right? Like, you always want to get maximum customization, but at some point you do have to make product decisions that are a fork in the road. And so at those points, you have to very clearly state, hey, if it's going to come down to delighting persona A or persona B, persona A will be my North Star. Right. So, for example, last night I was on a very late call with somebody who was like, hey, I have 3,000 executive assistants who I'm vetting tools for. How would Scheduler work for them? Right. And we kind of went through it. Right. And there are workflows you can use with Scheduler that are great for an EA. But there are certain decisions we've made, right, to say, hey, if we really made it work like this for EAs, it would be a weird experience for sales and recruiting people.
Oh, yeah.
So we are going to use them as our North Star in the product design. So, I mean, we have all kinds of people, again, using this, but I would say our best users, our highest paying, most satisfied users, our key target is people whose meetings generate revenue in some way or another.
But are they using it just internally within the organization, or they are using it, you know, for like a salesperson sending it externally to somebody else?
Yeah, great point. I should have done a better job of clarifying that. So it's in a couple ways, right? You have the actual, okay, let me use Scheduler to get the ball rolling for a meeting. Now, that could be a meeting with just a prospect. It could be, I'll tell you the one that people love, right? Is like, let's say you've just had a great sales meeting, and now let's say someone on your team, Matt, and they need to bring you along to the next meeting. Instead of going to your calendar, going to their calendar, pulling up a few times, putting those into an email, putting all the holds on it, right? Sending them over, waiting for the person to get back to them, which takes like 57 clicks we've tracked on average just to propose a few times for you and a team member that works to someone else. Pop on Scheduler, say, hey, Scheduler, can you propose a few times? It says, hey, the Full Scale team is available at these times. Do any work for you? Like that in under a minute, right? But the really interesting one is, and I know I was saying this to you before, a lot of our clients' favorite solutions were the ones that I was like, that's a really terrible idea. And for sales teams in particular, they had this whole concept of, right, we were talking about, hey, can you just monitor my meetings to make sure people aren't declining on me? Can you follow up with people to make sure that they're still going to make it, especially when they haven't accepted the meeting invite? And can you just help me make sure that those 8 meetings that I am fired up to go sell tomorrow are actually showing up to that? Because Psychologically, it's a huge drain on an AE to be like, I got, you know, 8 chances to sell tomorrow, and then you end up having 2. Right? I mean, that's brutal for those guys. They expect they have a full pipeline, and they're getting ghosted.
So your system is sending out reminders to get them to show up, like, is Mike going to show up to the podcast today, right? Like,
yeah.
But is that sending it through their personal email account and kind of acting like AI, or how do you do
that? We had a whole product debate on this one, and the approach that we've taken, which is working really well, is it is positioned as an assistant, right? So for example, if you had been before this call, let's say you were a Scheduler user, it would have checked out 24 hours in advance. It would have said, hey, Mike, just checking Matt's calendar for tomorrow. I wanted to make sure, are you still good to meet from this time? Right? It'd be yes, no, right? See, did I actually accept the calendar invite? Let's say I'm ghosting you right now. It'll touch base again. Hey, looks like you haven't gotten a chance to accept yet, Mike. Are you still going to be able to make it to this meeting? Right? And by that point, you have a pretty good idea, am I ghosting you or not? And that's where we see a lot of people say, hey, yep, sorry, I'll be there. Or, you know, things got crazy. Can we move this to, you know, next week at the same time? Boom, moved, booked, accepted, right? And then here's the final one that drives people nuts. Let's say I had just flat declined on you. Like, let's say you had a sales meeting, you were all prepped, and I had flat declined on you, right? Very demotivating. A lot of times people don't reach out. If you hit them within that first 2 minutes to be like, yo, Mike, this is Matt, scheduling assistant. Notice that you just declined this meeting. Are there better times to meet? it is actually pretty impressive the number of people that come back. So sorry, yes, I'm available on Friday. Or they don't hit it because they don't have the problem. The problem's right. All turning on or something. It's just like things get crazy. And so we put in the last 90 days over $1 million of pipeline for our clients back on the books just by chasing down those declines. So that's a,
that makes
so
a total lot sense.
In there for you, but yeah.
So do you see that as being kind of the heart, like one of the main drivers of the product going forward? Is this kind of reminder? So it's like you don't really care if they use Calendly or whatever they use. Your goal is to make it actually work and make sure people show up to the appointments.
So we kind of say, right, you know, on our site, let's help you set and show more meetings. And what I described there, right, was a lot of that like show, like I have confidence in my show rates. We've started rolling out more tools for actually setting more meetings. One of the really popular ones has been this text to schedule. So let's say somebody goes to Full Scale or something, right? They download a lead magnet of sorts, and you want to immediately reach out to them over text message, right? Because that's a high converting thing. They've already given you their phone number. They've agreed to be contacted and be like, hey, thanks for downloading this. You know, hope you enjoy it. Follow up a little bit after. You know, if you'd like to set up any time with our team, let me know some good times that work for you and I'll get it taken care of. And what you're able to do there, right, is really kind of kill this whole friction that exists today in getting that person to a meeting when they've clearly shown interest and opted into being contacted, right? We don't want to go all crazy. We've shut down clients who are like, I want you to just calendar spam. We're not going to do it, right? But if you got people that are interested, who want to quickly get contacted, quickly set up time, you can do that over text message. We've built this whole text-to-schedule platform that I would say recruiters in particular have really loved, right?
Yeah, it makes total sense for recruiting.
Yeah, they're working over text message, so just take care of it.
Yeah, like our recruiters that work for us in the Philippines at Full Scale, a lot of their work, yeah, it's all over SMS and, totally. You know, and it's different if you download a lead magnet and you still sort of feel like you're spamming somebody and you're trying to convince them to do these things, which is fine. That's part of marketing. It's all good. It's a numbers game. But recruiting is different. They're like, I want a job. I will correct. Respond, right? Yeah. So it's a different situation.
It's a different situation, and it's a mechanism, right, where no one, like, people don't tend to check their personal emails as much, but you're not going to send them a job opportunity to their business email. So like text message is kind of what you're left with. And so, yeah, you're right. That's a pretty hot one for recruiters.
So what's interesting about the scheduling space is there's so many different kinds of scheduling. And so I actually own scheduling software myself called gigabook.com. And it was created like 7 years ago or 8 years ago or something now. And we don't do anything with it. It's just kind of on the shelf. We have some customers that use it. And my business partner actually started it. And it's similar to you. He was trying to schedule, like, I don't know, a dog walker or some shit, something like that, and decided to create a scheduling service. And it was a long time ago. But what he quickly figured out in the process of building a scheduling system is trying to schedule, like, a yoga class where you could have 20 people and they're split across two rooms and what's the availability of the two rooms and the two yoga instructors and, like, all this kind of stuff is dramatically different and more complicated than somebody that's doing, like, wedding photography. Right? Like, the scheduling in general is, like, a just crazy plethora of problems to solve, right?
Yeah.
And there's not a one-size-fits-all solution for scheduling. And so another example of this is at Full Scale. Every one of our employees, we want our clients to be able to schedule an appointment with them to, you know, interview them as a developer and stuff. Well, that means we would have to have 250 accounts with Calendly or something, right? Because then we need to control, like, the workflow and alerts and notifications. Like, we need to standardize that across, like, all 250 people.
Yes.
That's a different sort of problem. Like, you'd have to go into Calendly and set up, like, a Zapier for every one of those and, like, do all this craziness. And point being, like, there are so many different challenges with scheduling that there's not really a one size fits all. There's just a whole plethora of things.
I totally agree. You know, and I think early on we thought we could be everything to everyone. You know, you have that kind of very, I think, horizontal mindset, right? Of, like, this market is a bajillion dollars because everyone has these problems, right? And as you get into it, you're like, I can't solve everything for everyone. I'll be nothing to no one. And that's very true in the scheduling space.
Yeah. I've even saw some kind of app the other day that I thought was cool. That was just about optimizing your schedule. So it was like for internally, like we have a stand-up call and I have a one-on-one and I have this and I have this. It's like, instead of having like a 30-minute break between all your calls, how do you reorganize your meetings so you have a longer, you know, break time, focus time later? Like you have 3-hour block of uninterrupted time later, have all your meetings in the morning. Like I've seen some very interesting solutions in the scheduling space. It's just fascinating.
I would guess that was probably Clockwise. It was probably...
I don't remember what it was called, but I thought it was interesting. But these challenges become bigger and bigger and harder in larger companies, right? I'm sure you probably have some larger customers where their schedulings are just a total mess, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And you throw time zones into that and it just gets really fun, right? So for example, last night though, when I was coordinating with somebody and they were like, can we do this time again? They're in Bangkok. I was like, all right, well, scheduler, send over an MPM, an invite for 9 p.m. and make sure you include Bangkok time in the response so we know when we're meeting. And of course, it's even like, say like, all right, so you're going to meet tonight at 9 p.m. your time. By the way, that's Tuesday, 9 a.m. for them, just so everyone's on the same page. Like that logic alone is, I'll say, non-trivial and leave it at that.
Thank you, Daylight Savings Time.
Oh man, don't get me started, Matt.
And this is where we have to blow everybody's mind and remind them that there are some parts in the world that have half hour difference of time zone.
IST.
India or some places, it's, you know, I don't know how many hours it is different from where we live, but it might be like nine and a half hours.
Yeah, nine and a half. Yeah. Deal with that one.
The funny thing about in the U.S., there's this big movement, of course, to get rid of daylight savings time.
Yeah.
But that's a hard problem for somebody like me who lives in Kansas City, where unless Kansas and Missouri do this at the exact same time, it would be an absolute disaster.
Yeah. No, there are a few counties in the U.S., like cities, that actually go different than their states. And, I mean, we have to accommodate for all of it.
It's fun. Fun problems.
It's fun.
Well, I do want to remind everybody that today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by FullScale. If you need to hire software developers, check us out, fullscale.io. So, Mike, in my notes here, it says you're co-founder and CTO. Are you CEO and CTO?
No, I am not. Thank goodness. My co-founder CEO is a much better business mind than I am. So it's actually my spouse. We have been, we've been together since we were 16. Right. So we've kind of just been crushing things together for as long as we remember. So went from the same high school. Both were really lucky. Went to Duke. From Duke, we both actually went to Cincinnati, which we had no ties to. But Maddie, my co-founder, was offered. She was, I think at the time, maybe the youngest brand manager that Procter & Gamble hired. It was like an experiment. Okay. And can an undergrad come in and run a business? Basically, right. And she had a phenomenal career at Procter & Gamble. I actually started mine in jet engine software with GE Aviation. So again, we kind of did took these career paths and big companies, right? She was with P&G up until the investment from Drive when we both went full time. I was with GE and then Nielsen. So we kind of spent our whole careers together in big companies. And now we've kind of come in and tackled this new problem together in the startup space.
So as CTO for the company, are you very hands-on writing the code, or you manage a team, or what is your role?
We're a small team right now, and we basically right now all of the code is written either by me or by my right hand at the moment.
Okay.
So we have kept very tight. I was very fortunate to bring Wynn over again after a pre-seed. And so we'd worked together very closely. And I think, you know, just having someone you can pair program with where you're very comfortable with each other's styles allows you to iterate and move very quickly, especially as you're trying to find product market fit. Right. So, I mean, we hired at times occasionally a couple people to do some specialized work. And you know, honestly, I think we sunk more resources into something where the market wasn't validated. And so now we've kind of had this, you know what, we are going to move as fast as possible until we're just absolutely sure we have it nailed. And the last few months have started to indicate that, which is why we started to kick up the seed round.
So obviously the company name is Scheduler AI. How has the AI part of this changed from when you started the development in 2021 till now? Like, obviously ChatGPT didn't exist, or maybe one of the early versions of GPT did, but how has that changed?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So what an evolution. So at the time too, it was, because it was that consumer focus, it was Get Together AI, right? So we originally started out as like that kind of, we're your friendly get together bot. And when we were in text message and in Slack, it was very short form. And so we could use, models that were more entity recognition based and do some basic logic to essentially very quickly break down the componentry of sentences and figure out, you know, here's the scheduling component, whatnot. But it was typically something as short as, hey, Matt, let's get together for 30 minutes for lunch next week, right? So getting like lunch, 30 minutes next week, one thing, like that's not that hard. Right. Like you can train your own model pretty easily to handle those sorts of things. When we entered email, it was right when ChatGPT was starting to become a thing. And email is another beast, man. There is so much other context going into that, right? That was where we had to really start leaning on some higher powered LLMs, because figuring out things like, I'm available next Thursday between this time, but not this, because little Johnny has a doctor's appointment. You know what I mean? Like, you've seen some emails where you say, and it's like,
but then they reply to that message and say something else. And then you reply to that message, say something else. Now you have a whole chain of junk you have to parse.
Now you have a whole chain. That's right. And you need to be remembering the context, right? Did somebody say, did one person say they were available at a time, but another person said they didn't? And how do you actually make sure that you're keeping that context? And one of the biggest insights that we had as a company, when you talk about being different than Calendly, I remember I came down from the shower one day and I told Maddie, I was like, scheduling doesn't start with a calendar. It starts with a message, right? Like, that was like a big kind of thing we hooked onto, right? It's like, it doesn't start with, let's pull up our calendars and decide what we're going to do. It starts with, let's jump on a podcast for an hour next week. Right? Like all the context is carried there. And so what we had to make sure is that, hey, if we're going to get into these messaging spaces, how do we very quickly identify who, what, when, where, why, urgency, right? Like, those are the components that you need to actually create a great scheduling experience that feels like a human would have taken care of the details.
I love this. Scheduling starts with a message, not a calendar. I love that. That is awesome. Because it doesn't feel that way when people send out Calendly links and stuff like that these days.
Yeah. Well, and I don't want to hate on Calendly either. We have been very fortunate to speak with Tope, their CEO. His story is incredible. I mean, that guy is like, I have nothing but amazing things to say about him as a human. And they've clearly solved a real pain point. But you also do see a very divided market, right? Like, the people who are like, if you drop a Calendly, you're dead to me. It's like, well, that's probably a little too far. Like, you know, people get like, I mean, this might sound weird to me, I don't get offended when people drop me a Calendly link, right? If I want to meet with you, I want to meet with you. But if I really want to go meet with somebody else, the last thing I'm doing is pushing a Calendly link to them, right? I need something that's more proactive that looks like I'm giving first.
Right. So let me ask you this. So we're talking about ChatGPT. So did you end up switching to ChatGPT when it came out, and you guys use that today, or?
So we ran a giant bake-off, man. We had our original model, which was that more entity recognition based. We had a fine-tuned version from a ton of training data that we ran on top of DALL-E, right? So we trained and deployed our own model. We had Google's Palm 2, and we had GPT at the time 3.5, right? And initially, our in-house model was outperforming, right?
Oh, like, wow.
It was doing great. As things started to get more complicated, as GPT became better, we started to see GPT-4 giving better performance and started giving more kind of the dominant model preference to that, right? But one of our key things, and we actually have a fully granted U.S. patent on this, which is crazy because we filed it before this all the AI world went wild, is that we can have a like agnostic kind of language model layer so that let's say Claude 2 becomes better at doing this sort of thing. Great, we'll use Claude. Let's say we our own in-house one is better. Great, we'll use that, right? We can run this through multiple models, kind of look at, you know, anonymize the data, look at it, score it, and decide who's better right now. And I think one key thing, right, just for like people who are listening in on this, if they're thinking about using our product, we also learned it's like you cannot send anything to OpenAI servers, right? So when I say we're running GPT-4, we're running GPT-4 on Azure, right? Like in our own environment where our customers' data. Yeah, man, when you draw that data flow diagram, you cannot show your data going to OpenAI, right? Like right. I know, but you can't do that. So Azure has actually been phenomenal. If you're a startup using those GPT models, you should be applying for the Azure credit and using it there. It is faster, it is more stable, and you don't have to worry about your data being trained on anything else. So rant over on that one, but I think that's critical.
So is it very expensive to use Azure for that?
Well, I mean, you know, again, being a VC-backed startup, you definitely are lucky in terms. Somebody posted the other day, they were like, people overemphasize how important credits are. And I was like, disagree. Party of one, because $150,000, you know, in credits from Azure is like, I don't even have to think about running this stuff through for 2 years, basically. And the pricing is actually very reasonable. It's very reasonable. I mean, you know how it is, Matt. It's all token based, right? So the more efficient you can be with your token, you can even make multiple round trip calls. The latency is getting better and better. And you're not really getting charged per call. You're getting charged per token. So you can be very thoughtful in the way you approach that.
Whenever I hear token, maybe you're like me, all I can think of is Chuck E. Cheese tokens.
Dude.
Maybe we just have too many
just
kids.
You're ruining that for me now.
It's all I can think of.
But,
So let me ask you this. So as a VC-backed company, how have you prioritized like your investments and how you spend money? I mean, you didn't raise a massive amount of money, but you raised a reasonable amount of money. So how do you think about like investing and deploying that? And then do you have a goal of like, I'm going to take this money, I'm going to invest it in R&D or sales to get to the next level and then raise another round? Like, how do you think about that?
So I would say, you know, we are very frugal, very prudent. Having come from like a big company background, actually, right, I think is somewhat of an advantage if you were in the right place as we are, which is, you know, this idea of not being profitable is very foreign to us coming out of the gate, right? Like, what do you mean you can do this and just lose money? So we've run very lean up to this point. And kind of the analogy that Maddie, my wife, co-founder, always uses, she's like, look, I am getting a car ready in the garage, right? The minute all that thing needs is gas, right? Marketing dollars, sales dollars, all that side of thing, we are going to pour in the gas, right? But right now we've been putting it through laps. It's like, is this thing going to win on the track, right? So we've put a lot of our focus into early product iteration, working with new customers, building a sales, kind of like a product-led sales motion that's starting to show that it could have the ability to scale. And then once we are confident, which we're finally at that point, right, to say, hey, look, all this needs is fuel. That's how we're kind of thinking about this next round, right? It's no longer a, well, customers might like it if we do this. And we have a couple neat ideas. It's like, nope, we have customers coming in every week from the market, paying a very healthy amount to make sure they get this result, and we're delivering it. Now it's time to go put money into that.
So do you have a certain goal you're trying to get to? Is it specifically like, hey, we hit product market fit? Or what is the kind of goal that you're – How do you know when you get there?
I should be asking you that, Matt. How do you know when you get there? Been there a few times.
When the money just starts raining down.
Yeah. Just
The Chuck E. Cheese tokens, they just keep coming.
Okay. What was it? They had that like coin machine, right? Where they would all just start falling. Yes. You know, and I've heard you, I'm sure you've heard this a million times, the whole like, how do you know you have product market fit? You know when you have it. Kind of thing, right? Like the pull feels undeniable. I would say we are kind of at our first inklings of that, where it's almost been overwhelming the people that we need to come in and onboard and get onto the platform, right? Where it's like, okay, we need a new level of scalability to this. Like, we did things that don't scale to make sure, you know, it's fit. Now it's starting to be like, oh darn, like now these certain processes need to scale because we can't bring people through the door fast enough anymore. Right. So I think that's, we have reached that level of good problem to have, and it is our new fun problem.
I ran across some kind of like how I randomly ran across you on LinkedIn. I randomly ran across this other group of guys that was doing some like lead qualifying, like prospecting sort of software. Mm-hmm. And I went to them and I said, hey, if you can make this work, this would be my dream.
Okay.
And they made it work. They've come up with like the most beautiful, like lead qualification thing, 100% custom for what I wanted. It uses AI, does all the stuff. It's very cool. Mm-hmm. And then I met with them yesterday and I'm like, okay, I originally told you I needed you to process 10,000 records a month. What if we did 500,000 instead?
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, we'd have to figure out how to scale a few things. And that's when you know you have product market fit, right? I'm like, okay, this thing works. We need a lot more of this thing. But my question for you is, have you had any customers come to you and ask for some like wild things? You said you like one of the things you thought was a bad idea ended up maybe being one of your best ones. But have you had some customers ask for like some really crazy things or scale or any of that kind of stuff?
I think the biggest thing that we get asked for, right, is we've had several mid-market CRM, ATS, like applicant tracking systems, right? Like, can we create first-party integrations with you? Can you become our AI scheduling component of our package? Those have been, I would say, they're not necessarily the crazy asks, but I think they're the asks that kind of point to the future, right? Of like, how do we make this feel like a part of our product? And I think that's a core thing that we're having to figure out as a company, right? Is like, how much of it is the scheduler AI brand versus how much do we enable other platforms to be successful and win off their usage, right? I mean, like a great example of this in the AI space is Recall. That AI, right? So anytime someone's Autopilot or forget what some of the other big ones are they power, right? But like all these AI meeting note takers are just being built on top of Recall. So like how do we become Recall for scheduling, I think is going to be a critical part of kind of our next step. There's some additional frictions in there, right? Like you actually have to own calendar tokens for people. And you know, that's very different than just like joining a call. So I think we have some real product challenges to figure out there. But honestly, if we can nail that, it's going to be really, really cool. And I know you and I were talking about this before at the beginning, right? I think we're entering this world of like multi-agent chaining, right? Yeah. So like your agent that these guys are building, right, will do a lot of things, but it won't do everything, right? But somebody else's agent will do that. So then how do you get those two to talk together? Like we have a client with another AI company that does, so they do voice calls, right? We do scheduling. And so this joint client has come to us and said, all right, guys, you make the calls, but then I want the meeting booked on the call. How do we make that happen, right? And so those sorts of like where you'll start to purchase these agents that talk to and hand off and have specialties and know when you give it to a human, that's going to come before like an artificial general intelligence, like AGI thing, right? Like we're going to see highly specialized, multi-agent workflows that feel seamless. That's my prediction for the next kind of big thing. That's really already coming.
My AI talking to your AI, that's going to be the future. And it's kind of weird and impersonal though.
In a little bit, but you know, like, so for example, one of the big things we try to do, right? Like, let's go back to scheduler. If you and I are both on scheduler and we say, yo, Matt, can we find 30 minutes to meet next week? The friction's gone. There's no friction. It knows your calendars, your availabilities, your preferences, your time zone. It knows mine, and it negotiates it without any nonsense of, you know, who's dropping a link first, who's putting the times, we're going to the EAs. It's just like, we as the humans have given permission to kick off the workflow, and then it just took away the awful part of it for us.
Well, I've got a feature request. Can I use your software to schedule my kid's first birthday party? It plans it. It gets the decorations. Yeah. It gets the cake. It gets all of it. It books Chuck E. Cheese. All of it.
We're going to get that Chuck E. Cheese API on the books. You get me in touch with the right guy. Well, you know, maybe they can hire Full Scale to put the Chuck E. Cheese APIs up there.
Because that's all my wife talks about right now, and I need some kind of AI to take care of that.
I tell you what, when we were in the consumer space, the types of requests we got were wild. So, like, pretty much like what you described all the time.
When you say wild like that, I think of like some kind of weird swinger meetup thing going on over text. I don't know why.
Oh man, don't get me started. We actually had to boot somebody from the platform for violating stuff earlier. So I mean, people are weird, Matt. I think when people are like, "Hey, what's been the most interesting thing about starting a scheduling company on things you didn't predict?" I'm like, people are weird. They will say weird. Oh, yeah. Your synthetic data will never predict the kind of things that come out of people's brains.
All right. So one of the last things I wanted to ask you about before we wrap this up today is, how do you balance being founder and CTO? So, you know, obviously you're writing a lot of the code, but how do you balance like all the other business related stuff that you're no doubt involved in? How do you balance that part of it? Because that's always a balance, I feel like, is a struggle if you're one of the, you know, founding, you know, founders. Yeah. And, you know, you're also chief cook and bottle washer and Chuck E. Cheese token picker upper, right? Like, how do you balance all these things?
You know, it's funny. I do describe to people when they're like, what's it like being a technical founder? I'm like, it's like getting on an elevator every day. It's like, starts at the bottom floor. What were all the bugs we saw yesterday? Goes up one level. Let's see, customer inquiries. Goes up another level. Sales meeting. Goes up another level. Investor. Oh, crap. A bug came through in Slack. Right back down to the basement, you know?
It means you fix WordPress all day.
Yeah, God, something off. But I think, I mean, you know how it is, man. It's like, you want to have this easy answer that like these like LinkedIn guru type people give you. It's like, here's how I structure my day. But the fact is, right, in a startup, things are changing. What is most important in a given day, week, whatever it is, it is going to change. Sometimes it is, hey, I've been out pushing on this product with customers for 2 weeks. They have been very clear about what they need to see. I don't need to go get more customers right now. I need to go take care of this, delight them, check in, and then go to the next batch.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, if you think about sprints, probably right, is probably the closest to it. Like at any given point, are we in more of a commercial sprint or in more of a product sprint? Because we don't have the benefit of the resources, right, of a company where you can just be highly specialized and constantly be working at something. I don't want to go off on a huge tangent here, but I mean, I will say, you know, one of the things, right, is so before the kids get up in the morning, you know, every day at 5, Maddie and I come down here to this office with a cup of coffee, and we do kind of say, like, what is the most important thing to accomplish for our customers today, in the next week, right? Like in the next month. And then we kind of have those touch points. And if things need to adjust, they need to adjust. And if not, we kind of just buckle in and get it done, man. I mean, you know how it is. You just gotta strap up and
So are you heavily involved in sales?
So yes, we've kind of come up with a pretty good, for the most part, Maddie will take 80% of the initial meetings, right? Okay. I'll probably take another 20%. And one of the cool things, right, with scheduler is we kind of have this four strength capability where it'll give it to the first person. Like, let's say Maddie is the first person first. And if she doesn't have the time they want, it'll pass it on to me. It's a really nice feature. But then like once she's kind of qualified, like, yo, this is a good account, you need to go close it. That's typically when it'll come to me to like kind of make sure everything's good, get them onboarded, right? Started to go. And that's been a pretty nice 1-2 handoff, right? It's like, this is a good person. They're a strategic account. Get them onboarded, make sure it closes and move on. But yeah, man, I mean, look, we were terrible at selling a year ago. I mean, just awful. We had no idea what we were doing. We got a sales coach. Hey, that was actually what I posted, your LinkedIn thing. That's what led to all this, right?
Oh, okay.
We got a sales coach. We learned how to sell and getting better at it every day. But it's definitely a competency, right? That like, yeah, I mean, you know how it is. You just got to build it. Like it is a reps game. It's work.
Well, I think one of the superpowers of a really good technical founder, and I think this describes both of us probably well. If you can build it, that is a great skill set. Yeah. Even better is being able to go talk to customers, actually understand what they want and get it. Actually get it, actually understand it, put on your product hat. You're really good at figuring out how the product's supposed to work, having like the vision of all of that, and then going back, you know, behind the curtain, like the Wizard of Oz, yes. building the crazy thing, and then delivering it. Like, that is the real true superpower of like a startup CTO, is being able to do all of that. Not the CTOs that struggle that I talk to on LinkedIn, they're like, I built this thing because I had this idea and I like to build things. I've never talked to anybody about it, but I should probably figure out how to sell it. Like, that's like almost instant doom every time.
Yeah.
That is not your personality, I can tell.
Well, early on it was, though, man. I was like, I have an idea the world needs, and once I build it, they will all come. That was like,
That doesn't usually work.
It's, I always tell people right there, like, this might be my first startup, but at this point, I feel like a second-time founder. I don't feel like a first-time founder anymore with the rose-colored glasses on. And I, you know, going back to what you said, too, I think that the real superpower of being that technical founder, right, is like, when I make a commitment to say we can do this, it's not a wing and a prayer. I hope the tech team says that I'm not a liar, right? It's like I can make this commitment because we're about to go back and build it, and I can already see in my head how it's going to work.
Yeah.
So when you hear yes from me, you can assume that means yes.
That is the superpower of having a really good technical founder right there. Like, that is the superpower of having somebody on the team that can make those decisions and actually deliver. Like, that's where the magic happens. So
100%.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. Reminder today, check us out at fullscale.io. If you're looking to hire software developers, that's my company. We have 300 employees in the Philippines. Again, that's fullscale.io. Our guest today was Mike Bell, the co-founder and CTO of scheduler.ai. Sounds really cool. I love the whole reminder system. And honestly, I bet I could make a lot more money if I was using it for recruiting to get some of these people hired. Because problem is, you have to just follow up with people. You just have to chase people, right? Like, they just don't show up the way that you want them to show up. Even if you're trying to hire them for a job, they still don't you still got to recruit them.
You do. And I'd say, though, sitting on this side of the seat has given me so much empathy, because I start to recognize, you know, you never want to do it to others, but you recognize your impulse to do it. And you're like, oh, darn it, I'm just like them, right? Like, everybody kind of is. And so to that exact point, right, like things like follow ups and being like, thank you for following up with me. You start to realize like, oh, okay, it's okay. We do that.
Well, so my last question for you as we end the show here is, what is it like having your wife as a co-founder?
Yeah, I mean, look, the crazy thing is Maddie and I have been together since we were 16. So we've been building stuff together for a long time. And, you know, we also have three kids, and we had some very successful entrepreneurs in our family who I think kind of, you know, that became, you know, something that was maybe toxic to their family in the long run. And for us, right, when people would be like, hey, your startup's going to be like your fourth child, we were very negative against that at first, right? Because it's like, oh no, this is like different. But now that we've done it, we're like, in a way it kind of is, because I see the parts of it that reflect her, right? Like when somebody sent me a note today and they're like, oh, love the new banner above your site, that's like so good. That was all Maddie, right? Like she designed our entire site. Anytime it's iterating, she's doing it, right? And it's like, it's cool to see that, right? Or, you know, like when something comes out, like she'll say like, you know, it's such a, like a robot would say it that way, where it's like, well, that's me, right? So like, you got to help me finesse it. But you start to see these parts of you and your spouse come out in your product, in the way the company is being run. And just like a kid, right, where you see the traits of it in the kid, like you do start to see that. And it has turned from something that I would have considered to be very negative when we started this, right, so that to like a, yeah, no, that is kind of how it is. And that's kind of neat, right? That's pretty special. I mean, we're co-authors on the patent. Like, that's pretty cool, nice. Right? Like,
yeah, that's very cool.
On a patent. That's neat.
That's very cool. Well, I have five kids, and I swear I just see all the worst of me and their mom and the kids. So I hope you see some good traits, because I always just see the bad ones.
It's tough, man. But kids are crazy. Yeah, you definitely see your own flaws in them real quick. Like, how dare you? Darn it, I definitely.
Yeah, I do that. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. Again, this was Mike Bell. You can check him out at scheduler.ai. Very cool. And thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Matt.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.